What's up, everybody? This is Grant at Cause Artist. Welcome to the Investing in Impact podcast, where we interview impact investors, general partners, and family offices from around the world. Each week, conversations will bring on industry insiders to discuss the latest news, topics, and trends in impact investing. In episode 67 of the Investing in Impact podcast, I speak with Erin Siestra, head of investments at Hope Lab Ventures, on her journey, health tech, Medicare startups, and the mission and vision of Hope Lab. Erin is responsible for the development and oversight of Hope Lab's work investing in organizations and companies that aim to improve the health and well-being of teens and young adults. In her role, she sources, executes, and manages investments, positioning Hope Lab as both a financial and a strategic partner to entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and innovators. As a social impact investor, Hope Lab Ventures invests in companies that support the mental health and well-being of adolescents, particularly in underserved communities. The organization backs founders with lived experience related to the youth and mental health topics it supports. The team believes those founders are uniquely equipped to develop effective solutions. Hope Lab Ventures' investment approach combines early-stage capital with expertise in research, design, youth co-creation, and payment models to support the development and adoption of better, more diverse, and accessible mental health and well-being solutions for young people at scale. When you get a chance, please share, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. Enjoy the interview.
Well, thank you so much, Erin, for joining me today. Very excited to chat about Hope Lab, chat about impact investing from your lens and kind of everything that Hope Lab is doing in the space. But kind of before we go down that road, talk a little bit about, you know, your journey, maybe your career arc before Hope Lab. I'd like to understand how people get into the impact investing space. So walk us down that path before Hope Lab.
Yeah, really happy to. And thank you for having me today. So I started my career in biotech. I always grew up loving science. I studied biology in college and through process of elimination realized I didn't want to be a doctor. I didn't really want to sit in a lab pipetting and doing research all day, but I wanted to find a practical application for my love of science. And that really led me to this idea of working in healthcare at large. But from there, I wasn't quite sure where I would want to specialize, where I would want to spend the most time. So like many people who don't quite know what they want to do, I started in consulting. I worked for a life sciences boutique where we worked with biotech and pharma companies, companies of different stages, different disease areas. I found the questions and the projects that I enjoyed the most were really the ones that were working on early stage startups, helping typically these larger companies think through, okay, who's working on really interesting research at a startup or at a university that we might want to partner with and learn from. And so as I reflected and thought about what I would want to do after consulting, I really wanted to work in earlier stage innovation. And I had a chance to go to Johnson & Johnson, to their innovation center, which is really this cool hybrid of corporate venture, as well as a business development partnering arm. And so got to work with early stage startups on behalf of Johnson & Johnson, really thinking through questions like, okay, what are the major risks for this investment? And how can we help a company de-risk? How can we help them design experiments to learn quickly, to fail quickly, to help them understand where do we go from here? How do we improve from here? And how do we ultimately get to a place where we're building something that can be on the market and help people? And while I was at Johnson & Johnson, I again started in the biotech arm, but had a chance to move to consumer health, which is where digital health lives. And that's when I just totally got bitten by this bug where I got so excited about the potential for digital health as a tool for social impact and for health equity and for really rethinking how we access and pay for healthcare, particularly for populations that are traditionally excluded from those conversations. And so I kind of had this light bulb where I thought, I'm so interested in learning more about digital health and learning more about tools that can actually improve access and quality. And so I went and got my MBA. And while I was in grad school had a chance to work with two Medicaid-focused startups. So they were building solutions for low-income Americans in particular. And they were phenomenal companies, teams, leaders, products. And I saw firsthand how challenging it was for them to fundraise, for them to convince investors that they should allocate resources to populations that did not have a lot of buying power. To, you know, Medicaid is subsidized by the government. So it's a really complicated payer. You're going state by state, as well as at a federal level and plan by plan. And so I kind of emerged from those experiences feeling like there was so much potential that the investors they were going to weren't seeing, or that didn't align with how the investors were thinking about returns. And I really wanted to go into an investing role, but that was focused on impact, where I could actually play a role in supporting these businesses that had huge potential to help a lot of people if they just had sort of a chance and some capital to do so. And so I pretty serendipitously got connected to Margaret Laws, who's the CEO of Hope Lab, around the time she was thinking of starting up a venture arm. Mm-hmm. And so Hope Lab has actually been around over 20 years, but Hope Lab Ventures, we just started together about 4 years ago. And so it was really, if you can think of what was going on in the summer of 2020, which is when we were chatting, there was a lot. There was the pandemic. There were conversations about racial justice and a lot of conversations around mental health. And we found that there were actually a lot of companies being founded and being funded in mental health, but we didn't really get the sense that many of them were focused on teens and young adults, or were focused on people from underserved backgrounds. And so we saw this opportunity for us to come into this space and to work with companies to help them really think through how to center health equity, in addition to thinking through how they're just going to sort of grow and scale as a business. And so that was the journey that started from a general interest in healthcare to really getting excited about digital health and social impact, getting some exposure to Medicaid, and then having this opportunity to actually build out an investment practice that's really focused on healthcare solutions for underserved populations.
That was a little bit of my follow-up was around Hope Lab and kind of how would you describe it, because it's like you said, it's got a venture arm, has like this research arm, it kind of has this incubation arm. Like, I guess get the overview of just the organization in general.
Yeah, really happy to. And like you said, we're a unique organization. Yeah. We're kind of hard to pin down. We are a nonprofit with the mission of improving the mental health and well-being of teens and young adults. We do all of our work from a health equity lens. So really thinking through how we can support solutions that are intentionally designed to be inclusive of young people from underserved backgrounds, whether those are people who identify as BIPOC, as LGBTQ+, as low income. There are different ways you can think about sort of the populations that we're impacting. And we're organizing our work into three buckets. One is really around supporting innovators who are building solutions for youth mental health. One is around translating science into impact. And I'll talk a bit about that. And then one is actually around supporting young leaders themselves and hoping to seed the next generation of change makers for youth mental health. And so Hope Lab Ventures sits in that first bucket around supporting the innovators themselves, where we make a financial investment, but we're really making the financial investment as a way to build a relationship so that we can then partner with these companies and support them as they're thinking through, okay, how do we best engage young people? How do we build how do we build a product that they would actually like to use so that they can actually have the impact that, you know, that we're hoping to see? How do we help think through Medicaid? So that's kind of as investors, we're not just financial investors, but strategic investors as well. On the translational science arm, we're both funding research to better understand kind of the mechanisms underlying youth mental health and well-being, as well as solutions that can work to improve outcomes. And then we're really trying to play this role bridging academia and industry, knowing that there's actually a lot of knowledge that often sits in academia and doesn't wind up getting incorporated into the products. And then you've got a number of products that have, you know, varying degrees of evidence supporting them. And so we're really trying to play this role as a bridge to ensure that the products that are available to young people are actually rooted in evidence and actually work. And then on our third bucket around supporting young leaders, we do a number of initiatives. One is the Responsible Technology Youth Power Fund, which is a program where we're writing grants to intergenerationally or youth-led organizations that are really around sort of responsible uses of technology. We've got a program called the Young Innovators in Behavioral Health, where we're recognizing youth leaders who are really putting together meaningful projects and having meaningful change in their own communities. And so really part of the hypothesis across a lot of our work is that people who have lived experience either with the populations or the mental health conditions that they're trying to serve often have insights that really equip them to understand their end user or their customer and therefore help them better serve their needs. And so, you know, that manifests in the founders that we think about backing. It also manifests in the young people and wanting to empower them to say, here's what I need as a young person, and to not have it all come from, you know, people and older generations who think they know.
What stage would you say most of the time that Hope Lab would come in at us? I mean, is it seed? Is it Series A?
Our sweet spot is seed and Series A. And so we're really looking for companies that have some early evidence of product market fit. Of course, they're early stage. They're going to keep pivoting and responding to new inputs. But really companies that, A, have some evidence that what they're doing is working. So that it's having kind of the desired impact on the people they're serving.
A functioning website?
Right.
Let's say at least have some of this.
At least. And then the second is really around companies that have at least found several paying customers. And it kind of depends on their model, if those are payers or consumers themselves or schools. So there's not maybe a hard benchmark that we're looking at there, but some evidence that that people are willing to pay for the solution and that the people who are paying for it are actually seeing benefit. That's kind of the point where we can come in and then help them think through, okay, from here, how do we really grow in a sustainable and equitable way that enables us to have impact at scale?
So one of my favorite things I like to kind of dive into is like, what are entrepreneurs working on? You know, what are some of the cool things that you're seeing being built? You know, I don't want to call them favorites because I know they're like all your kids, right? You don't want to say, you know, what company in the portfolio is your favorite, but like maybe shout out a couple that's working on some cool things that you think would be interesting to listeners.
Yeah. I would love to do that. And to anyone listening, I would never pick favorites among our portfolio. They're all phenomenal. But a few ideas come to mind that I think just illustrate the breadth of the kinds of things that we're working on. Because it's not all purely healthcare. There's actually kind of a wide range. And so maybe the first company I will talk about is a company called Backpack Health. They are a platform that is specifically designed to provide pediatric mental health care services for young people who are federally insured. So that's typically through Medicaid. And they're doing a number of really interesting things. They've got a multilingual platform for managing health details, care, communication. It actually helps people track their own health journey and control their health information in one place. They've got this really cool therapist residency program where they're actually working with pre-licensed clinicians. So they're, of course, supervised by someone who's licensed, but it's a way to actually have young people have therapists who are closer to them in age, who can understand their cultural references, who, you know, were teens not long ago. And something we hear from young people a lot is, you know, sometimes I feel like my therapist doesn't understand me at all. And I spend so much time explaining myself and my life that I don't actually get into, you know, what I was hoping to talk about. And so I think that's a really interesting piece of their care model is actually sort of using these, you know, almost near peers, pre-licensed professionals. And then, you know, they're also doing some really interesting work just around their care model itself. So how do we incorporate play? How do we incorporate reading? How do we kind of make both therapy itself, but also just the concepts of learning about your emotions, emotional regulation, coping skills. How do we make those accessible for a young person who might be learning these terms for the first time? And so they're an example of a platform that I think they're completely impact focused. They're starting with this really high unmet need population of young people on Medicaid. They're reaching them through schools, through foster care, through their physicians. And so really trying to think through how can we provide care to the people who need it most? And how can we provide care in a way that's accessible and relatable, which ultimately we believe will lead to better outcomes. And so their founder, Hafiza Muhammad, is just a phenomenal founder. She's got a really compelling vision, and it's been really exciting to be able to support her. So that's one example.
Yeah, that's great.
And then I'll give another example that's sort of completely outside of healthcare, just to show the breadth of what we mean when we're talking about, you know, mental health and well-being for young people. And so we made an investment in a company called Trace, which is an online community and social platform for people undergoing gender transition. And so it's not specifically about healthcare. It's really around having a chance to kind of share and celebrate and learn from other people in the trans community. You know, there are things like being able to record voice notes and track those over time. So you kind of have this living journey of your transition. And, you know, again, they're not marketing this as a mental health solution, but you can see how being able to sort of be in a community where, you know, you're celebrated as you come into your identity, as you go on this journey, can be really positive for mental health and well-being as well. So not a healthcare intervention, but certainly tied to the well-being of the young people who would be going on that journey.
You mentioned on Backpack real quick. I kind of want to touch on the business model when you're talking about, like, for lack of a better term, Medicare startup. Is that then, is it important that Medicare subsidizes something like Backpack, or does Medicare pay for it? Is it Backpack's job to kind of pitch Medicare on getting them as a provider or somewhat? Because I mentioned this because, you know, my dad hit a certain age and he had a stroke, and he was, you know, I had to kind of help him get set up and kind of, and it's a chore, you know, to kind of just deal with Medicare and kind of get set up and stuff. There's just so many different things and supplemental plus and all this stuff. It's just, it is a wild ride when you are just thrust into it. I guess going back to when you look at startups within the Medicare space, is a startup usually pitching Medicare to get them to kind of trust them and bring their brand within that ecosystem? Is that a big part of it?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And thank you for sharing about your dad. I'm sorry you and he went through that. And it is, as you said, it's even for people who know healthcare really well, it is really hard to navigate as a patient or as a caregiver, and then also, you know, as a provider and someone who's trying to provide care. And so for a company like Backpack, it's exactly what you described. They're actually trying to get Medicaid plans to pay for their services directly.
Gotcha.
And as you can imagine, because they are a government-funded program, sometimes the reimbursement rates via Medicaid are lower than what you would get through, you know, your commercial insurance through your job, for example. And so that's one reason that a lot of companies choose not to pursue Medicaid, is because it can seem like you're being paid less. The flip side of that, though, is that if you look at our country, there are so many people on Medicaid, right?
It's
the largest insurer in the country.
Yeah.
And so, you know, where you really have the potential to scale as a business is in volume. And as you're thinking about impact and, you know, people who have the highest unmet need, Medicaid is a really important piece. And so what a company like Backpack will do is they will actually contract with the Medicaid plan to be able to provide services to their members. And so if a member then, you know, they, or more likely if it's a parent who has a need for their child, then they can say, okay, these are the providers who my Medicaid plan will pay for. And they've got kind of this direct access into really high quality care, which makes it possible for these families to actually find someone who takes their insurance, who doesn't have, you know, a 6-month wait list, and can actually get into the care that they need pretty much as quickly as they need it.
I wanted to touch on a little bit of the science stuff that you you touched on before, and how Hope Lab looks at science as a part of their ecosystem to kind of make strategic decisions or make philanthropic decisions. I guess, how does science or research and, you know, aligning with that community, obviously that would help on the venture side, help on philanthropic side, but also the research side. Like, how does science weave into to everything that you're a part of?
It's exactly what you said. It weaves into everything. Yeah. And it's really at the core of Hope Lab. And so, you know, I think what we believe is that by better understanding young people, the factors mm-hmm. that are mm-hmm. affecting their health and well-being, both negative and positive, I should say, you know, being able to understand the challenges, the opportunities is ultimately going to lead us to be able to build better solutions. And so it's really, how do we build that foundation of knowledge? And then how do we use that to improve? And so on the venture side, for example, you know, we're often working with our portfolio companies to help them think through, how are they going to measure outcomes? How are they going to demonstrate that their product is efficacious and has impact? And then when they get that data, how are they going to use that data to further improve? Yeah. You know, on the side of, you know, just understanding young people in general, every few years, we at Hope Lab do a national survey of young people themselves, where they're talking about their use of technology, they're talking about their mental health and well-being. And, you know, something that we hear from young people a lot is, often when we're talking about the mental health and well-being of young people, we're using almost this crisis narrative of, you know, everyone is struggling mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, things are so yeah. terrible and what are we going to do about it? And it's all social media's fault. And there are elements of truth in that. And what we're hearing from young people is, we would love for you to actually talk about all of the potential of our cohort. We'd love to actually tell you about the ways that social media has been really beneficial for us in building community, in understanding ourselves in the world. We'd love you to talk about how yeah. our generation actually seeks therapy and talks about our mental health and well-being so much more than previous generations. And so there's also just this piece around using research to shift narratives and to really yeah. think through, how do we focus on the assets and the potential of young people and not just the challenges? And so that's kind of another way that research, I think, helps us both improve the solutions, but also to sort of improve the narrative around young people and their mental health.
What has been your experience coming from a corporate infrastructure, you know, let's say into, you know, a philanthropic infrastructure? The one thing I always thought was interesting was that how, to me, you know, philanthropic capital almost has like a odd responsibility to take a little risk mm-hmm. in funding these startups, looking or funding science a little bit, because they sort of have this little advantage where, you know, they don't have these investors looking over them and looking at certain things, where it's actually a really great model to take the necessary early stage risk to kind of develop great things, especially in non-traditional funded areas for non-traditional funded founders. Or so I guess, how has that been kind of looking at philanthropic venture, let's say, or just that model of doing it from a Hope Lab's point of view versus maybe, you know, the other stuff you've been a part of?
Yeah, I love that question. And I'm nodding along as you speak, because it's exactly right. Because we are not a traditional or an institutional venture capital fund with limited partners who have a specific expectation yeah. Of, you know, the scale and the timeline of the return, we do have some more flexibility to really be patient. And I think it's the patience that is really important as you're thinking about health equity and systems change, right? If we're trying to build businesses that better serve the needs of, let's say, people of color or LGBTQ young people, there's a lot of, I would say, infrastructure and trust that needs to be built over time and can't necessarily happen within, you know, the 7-year time frame that you need to have an exit if right. you're, you know, an right. institutional investor. And so, you know, I would say with the businesses that we invest in, it's kind of this interesting paradox, because we're investing alongside institutional investors. And so these are businesses that have yeah. Yeah. potential for scale and potential for growth. And I find that because we sort of play this role of impact investor, we're able to be in the room and to really help just recenter health equity in the conversations that we're having. So we want these companies to grow and scale and to be able to help as many people as possible. And we also want to make sure that included in as many people as possible, you're including people of color, you're including LGBTQ young people. And so there's kind of this chance for us to play this role that I will say the founders themselves really appreciate, because they started these companies because they want to help people. And of course, in the course of growing a business, you've got all kinds of competing priorities. You've got trade-offs you need to make. And for them, it's really helpful to have a thought partner who can sit down with them and think through, okay, you know, what are the choices that we can make today that will enable us to better serve these underserved populations over time. And it's that patience, I think, from us, where we're not always saying, just grow as quickly as you can. We're sometimes saying, you know, actually, it might make sense to, you know, spend a year learning about Medicaid and developing a strategy there. And so I think we just play this role of being a thought partner who can help help see the bigger picture and the longer term plan around how you get to impact at scale. And we're able to do so because we don't have that same pressure of just returning the capital as soon as possible.
A couple more questions I have. One would be, in this sector where it seems like nobody in it really likes the system it's in, it's such a weird thing. It's like the biggest market in our economy and almost nobody in it likes it. It's just this weird thing. And from your point of view in dealing with, like you said, early stage startups to dealing with Medicare, to dealing with insurers, I'm sure, to dealing with all these different levels of the system, I guess one is, are you optimistic that things, you know, because the system is maybe so fragmented and there's a lot of dysfunction, that there's a lot of opportunity for startups and founders to come in and make that easier? So are you optimistic that we can create change in the sector from an entrepreneur point of view, or is it so sort of kind of bogged down where it suppresses innovation and suppresses sort of this traditional venture idea of kind of move fast and break things?
Yeah.
I guess overall, like being in it now for years, looking at different aspects of it, I guess, what is your overall opinion on?
I love that question. I want to say I'm a combination of optimistic and realistic, which is, you know, I am optimistic that the companies that are being started and built today are actually going to positively impact outcomes for the people that they're serving. And, you know, something that I think a lot about is we actually have a pretty good sense of what kinds of interventions work for, I'll say, for mental health in general, for young people. And often it's actually now less of a question of coming up with a unique solution and often a question of how do we make this accessible to the people who need it? And so
I
think, you know, I'm actually really encouraged that we've like, I wouldn't say solved by any means, but we've got things that work. And now we're kind of innovating more on business model and on accessibility. And so there's, I feel optimistic that we'll be able to continue to think through novel ways to pay for and sort of get these products in front of the people who need them. And I think a big piece that will move the needle, in addition to just having these companies, these founders who are thinking about novel ways to find and treat people, I think policy is a big piece.
I think there's
the systemic context of how our healthcare system works, how Medicaid and Medicare are reimbursed. And, you know, there are some phenomenal sort of partners that we work with who are thinking about the policy piece. And I think business model and policy really go hand in hand, particularly in healthcare, where there's a lot you can do within the confines of the current system. And then there's a lot you hope to be able to do in the future as the system evolves, and a role that you hope to be able to play in shifting and evolving that system. And so I think that's where, going back to the word patience, you know, that's where actually saying, we see where you are now and how you're working today. We also see the potential of where you could go. We understand that that requires a lot of systemic change beyond sort of the direct impact of your company. And we believe in sort of giving the time and space for you to be able to explore that. And so I think there's the optimism that we've got some things that work now and can work on scaling those. And then maybe the realism that that systems change, it takes a long time. Policy is a completely different skill set than entrepreneurship often. And so really, you know, something that we think about at Hope Lab is how can we play a role bridging those worlds and bridging those conversations so that they're complementary.
The last thing I'll end on is just a little bit about the future and, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years down the line, what do you and the team hope to, are there some goals and successes that, you know, you hope to really achieve within sort of that 5-year benchmark, what those might be?
You know, when I think about Hope Lab Ventures in particular, there are a few ways that we think about our impact, and I think they bear out over different time periods. And so in the shortest term, we're thinking about, okay, how many people were positively impacted by the companies that we're investing in. In 5 years or so, I would also like to be able to say, you know, how did the success of our portfolio companies actually inspire more founders and more funders to put their either human or financial capital toward youth mental health and well-being? And so, you know, often, for example, the companies that I talked about in my introduction, they had a really hard time fundraising because investors didn't think that they could make any money in Medicaid. In 5 years, I would love to have examples in our portfolio of companies that absolutely, you know, did an amazing job in scaling, in building a viable business, in helping a lot of people in Medicaid, so that the next set of companies that try to fundraise in Medicaid, their investors say, oh, well, we can look at Hazel, we can look at Backpack. We actually do see this as something that could work and could scale. And so that's kind of one of those examples of where I see the ripple effects of our work. And I'm hoping that within that 5-year timeframe, you get fewer investors and funders kind of passing on these solutions out of hand because they don't think they can work, they don't think they can scale, they don't think they'll be lucrative. I would love to be able to point to a bunch of examples and then have those be the impetus for more funding, more founding companies, and hopefully then just more people putting their brain power and energy toward the mission that we really care about, which is, you know, the mental health and well-being of young people.
Amazing, Erin. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. This was a great conversation. I learned a ton, and I know others will as well. Keep up the great work, and best of luck for you and the team for the next decade.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to chat.